Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 167 of Geek Town Radio. I'm your host Dave, and I have with me Ross.
Hey Dave, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good, good. Everything treating you well?
Yeah, everything's going right. It's been a busy few weeks, tell you what.
Good, always good to keep busy.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean it is, but I've realised after writing, so I'll write a little list of what I've been looking at so we can talk about it. A lot of this is Netflix stuff. I've been on Netflix a lot this month, and considering none of this is going anywhere, maybe that's a bad decision. we always talk about the idea that Netflix is great and you should, there's some really good stuff on there, but none of it's not going to be there in 2 months,
right? Yeah no, exactly. So what have you been watching?
First of all, we'll get on to what I've been playing.
Yes,
if you don't mind, Dave.
Yes.
I've been playing Bloodborne on the PlayStation. So this is Bloodborne now is what, 3 years old, maybe 2 years old, something like that. But it's, I wanted to mention it because it's amazing the sort of community that surrounds it in a way that I've never really experienced with a video game before. So I'm listening to I'm reading message boards and listening to podcasts and watching YouTube videos on the first 3 hours of this game or whatever. And there's only going to be more. And there's so much knowledge that isn't visible at first sight and things you might have missed if you're not that deep into it. And there's just a whole lot of, it's almost like certain movies have a cult following and there's theories about, what it means and everything.
Yeah.
It feels a lot like that. But yeah, definitely. I was into the sort of the milieu around it before I started playing the game. And I definitely recommend just reading about what Bloodborne is and watching some YouTube videos about it. And because it's really deep, it's surprisingly deep for one, just a video game, and two, a game that you don't even have to play to be sort of sucked into the idea of it.
It's not one I've played actually, and it's, I don't know, just never really kind of leapt out at me, but maybe it's one I should go and have a look at.
Yeah, it's good. It's like sort of gothic horror. It's quite challenging. It's a big time sink. Already I've found that it's a massive time sink. There's no particular way to pause it, so you've got to, you're in it. Once you're in it, you're in it.
Yeah,
there are sort of safe areas where you're not going to die, but it's quite tense.
Yeah, interesting.
But yeah, so if you've got time, a lot of time. Other things then. So a lot of Netflix stuff, like I say. We started watching a new, I don't know if it's, I think it's relatively recent to Netflix, but it's not new, a sitcom called Kim's Convenience, which is about the Kim family, who are a Korean family who own a little shop, like a newsagent shop in, I think in Canada, possibly.
Right, yeah.
I think it doesn't sound that like it's going to be that amazing, right? Because it's a fairly common setup, right?
Yeah.
A family owner shop. But I think it used to be a play or a show of some description, and it's really, really, really well written, and it's very clever. And I just think it's worth a go. It's like a 20-minute sitcom. It's on Netflix, I think the first 3 seasons, and there's another one coming. definitely right. worth a go.
Right, okay. Yeah, it's not one I'd heard of, but
I think we watched a trailer. You know, sometimes if you leave Netflix on, it'll just play a trailer.
Yeah.
So I think it just played a trailer, and I thought, oh, we'll give that a go. And, and it's really good. that is how they get you. Another thing I've been watching in terms of sort of semi-sitcom land is Glow.
Yeah.
Which is a bit more sitcom drama. I watched the first season with Marc Maron, who I listened to podcasts, so I thought, I'll give this a go. And it's really good, actually. I'm not really into wrestling particularly. It's about sort of a group of ladies who wrestle in the 80s.
Yes. Yeah.
And they sort of set up a TV show. So actually, if you're interested in sort of setting up the idea of shows about how TV shows are made, that sort of thing, there's a fair bit of that in it, actually. But also it's about, you know, these people's lives and the dramas and sort of, it's also interestingly about representation of characters. So, you know, a lot of 80s programs have quite stereotypical people in them, and they talk about, you know, there are themes as to why that is and how problematic that is and you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which is really good. I'm only a couple of episodes in, but it's second season's going really well.
Cool, good. Yeah, again, it's another one I've not quite got to yet, but I keep on thinking I should go and watch it because I know it's been quite popular. So
yeah, but again, not going anywhere.
Yes.
Another thing we watched that I really want to get back into is a program called Good Girls.
Yes. Which
similarly, saw a trailer, thought we'll give one episode a go. I think we watched two in the end. In the trailer, it sets all this up, so it's not particularly a spoiler, but these three women who are one of the ladies from Mad Men, one of the ladies from Parks and Rec, and one of the ladies who I think she was in Love, which is another Netflix show. But they all know each other one way or another, and they're sick of not having any money, or they all need money for living life like we all do.
Yeah.
So they decide to rob a supermarket, and it's about their journey from regular people who just, you know, need money for living like we all do to actual people who perpetrate a crime.
Yeah.
It's really good. It gets moving pretty quickly, and the close of the first episode particularly is very interesting. And you can see it reminds me of Breaking Bad in a lot of ways, because you know how in Breaking Bad you sort of, it started, but then you realize how deep he'd gotten into it accidentally.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, it has that feel to it. I have seen the first episode of this. I haven't managed to get back to it yet.
So you'll know the ending of which I speak.
Yes, yeah. I really want to get back to it because it's a great looking show. Christina Hendricks,
that's right,
Retta, and Mae Whitman are the three stars. And Matthew Lillard's in there as well, plays the husband of Christina Hendricks' character, Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
I haven't seen him since Shaggy from Scooby-Doo. He's really good in it, I think. He's actually pretty good as well.
Yeah, he's great. And there is an element of Breaking Bad to that whole series. It's slightly more comedic, I think, than maybe Breaking Bad is. And it's not shot in that kind of stylized sort of way that Breaking Bad is. But there are certain plot elements that are very similar to that. And it has got very dark turns in it, I think. So already renewed for a second season as well, definitely want to go and look at.
Yeah. And then speaking of Breaking Bad, actually, one of the things I watched earlier today was there's a trailer for Better Call Saul, probably the last trailer we're going to get since I think the new season starts this week or next week?
Next week, Tuesday next week.
There you go. And it looks really good. It's only a minute long, this trailer, and it sort of, it quickly establishes where we left off last season and you sort of remember and where we're going to go. And it seems like it's really amping up, because the whole, we always knew the whole season was going to be, he starts off as a lawyer. He ends up the sort of shady underworld lawyer that he is in Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
So we're looking at that transition, and it seems to really speed up a bit in this season.
Yes, yeah. They are talking about it dovetailing a bit more into Breaking Bad this season as well.
Okay. We saw a fair few, we've seen so far a few characters from Breaking Bad pop up, and it seems like they're a bit more prevalent this season, definitely.
Yes, we will be talking a bit more about Better Call Saul a bit later in our interview. So there's that
great
to come up.
Great. And the final thing I wanted to mention was just a nice little thing I picked up. I'm a big fan of Bob Mortimer. You know Bob Mortimer?
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
him and Paul Whitehouse have done a show called Gone Fishing.
I've seen little bits of this, yeah.
Yeah, they go out into various bits of the English countryside and fish for a bit. Now, I'm not really into fishing, but no. It's really good. It seems relaxing and it's a nice show. They both fairly recently had major heart operations. So a lot of it's about,
right,
you know, their lives and how they feel after that and what they're sort of doing to leverage nearly dying or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's quite a nice program, actually. It reminds me of The Trip. Do you remember The Trip?
Oh, with Steve Coogan? Yeah.
It reminds me of that quite a lot, Steve Coogan and Rob Roy. But okay. In a sort of, it's more edged towards these are older men who've got health problems and that sort of thing. So it's not afraid, they're not afraid to talk quite candidly about that, which is nice.
Interesting.
Yeah. Finally, Dave, I wanted to bring up some Marvel rumors I've heard with you.
Go on.
Because I mean, everything's happening right now, right? Everything that could be happening is happening.
Yes.
Marvel are buying Fox,
yes.
And that means they might or might not be getting your Fantastic Fours and your X-Men and all that stuff. There was a rumor I heard that they were going to just shut down what's happening with X-Men currently, which is, I think they've got a Phoenix movie coming out. They're just going to not bother with that and start fresh and do something else, which I've heard that is happening, and I've also heard that is not happening. So they may or may not have canceled it. But I wanted to know what you think about that.
Well, I mean, my feeling would be it would make more sense to shut it down and start again, I think.
I quite agree. I think they should cancel it.
Because, I mean, one of the main characters that you're going to want to introduce is Wolverine.
Yes.
And it gives them an excuse to, I mean, as brilliant as Hugh Jackman was, he's already said he's not doing it anymore. And, you know, he's getting a bit old for it. So I think it would be a good excuse to be able to reintroduce those characters within the Marvel universe. I mean,
also, you can reset everything. You can say, don't worry about where everyone was, we'll change it.
Yeah, because otherwise you've got to create a big thing, which is a sort of some sort of clash between the two.
Yeah.
And I mean, you potentially could do that, introduce some of that maybe in a post-credit scene for Infinity War 2, but you could start to hint at it there. I don't know, though. I think it might be easier just to cut everything off and start again.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing they were talking about is putting X-23 in one of these movies, who is the little girl from Logan, who you'll remember as possibly Logan-y powers.
Yes.
So that, I think that would definitely be interesting, but maybe she's too young to carry her own movie, or, you know, there's a lot of questions around that. Whereas just cut and run, start again is a much cleaner feeling.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know which way they'll actually decide to go, but you see, you've got two different lots of X-Men anyway in the Marvel Universe, because you've got the young ones and the old ones, and it might just make more sense to just cut everything off and start again.
There's this trend with sort of like these movies and I think Transformers movies where they can just go, oh, you remember that one you didn't like? Don't even worry about that. That doesn't exist anymore. These are the ones now. These are the good ones.
The one thing that I don't think you could ditch is obviously Deadpool. If you were going to pull Deadpool across into the main MCU continuity, it has to be Ryan Reynolds and it has to be that version. But I think you can get away with it with Deadpool because he's sort of fourth wall breaking anyway.
Yeah, I think he's already mentioned things about the MCU, right? Surely.
Yes, I think there were.
He mentioned Thanos in the last one.
Yeah, yes, there were. So, I mean,
why not?
You know, I think that's entirely possible.
Yeah. I also heard that they're quite Marvel are quite adamant to get the Silver Surfer and Galactus in a movie fairly soon, so that'd be a good maybe Guardians of the Galaxy Part 3 or something like that, Volume 3.
Yeah. I mean, I will be very interested to see what they do with it now they've got hold of those properties. So
definitely going to be an interesting year or so.
Yes, could be very well. It'll probably take a few years to sort everything out and get all their ducks in a row. But it's definitely an interesting few years for coming up for comic book fans in movies, I think, most definitely.
Great. So what have you been up to, Dev? What have you been doing?
The main new TV show I've been watching is Orange is the New Black, because that just started last week or earlier this week. And I thought, oh, I'll watch one episode, and I'm now five episodes in. So,
my wife watches Orange is the New Black, and I think I caught the back sort of four episodes of season five. And I completely understand why people are into it. It seems really good.
Yeah, it had a bit of a dip, I think it was season four.
All right.
Last season was really good. Season four was a little bit shaky. or maybe it was season three, I can't remember. There's one where they sort of end up with them all outside and playing around in a pool, and it wasn't great that season. It was a bit meandering, and I think they couldn't quite decide where to go. They've been very much back on track, especially since last season. Last season, which was a huge riot at the Lichfield Women's Penitentiary. Season six is all changed for them because they've all been sent to maximum security because the women's prison they were at, the low security prison, has been shut down. So they're now all in max with like proper hardened criminals. So that's kind of interesting because it splits the gang up a bit more. They've all been interrogated about exactly what happened in the prison. There were some nefarious things that went on with the guards in the prison, which they didn't know about and are now discovering. So are now getting blamed for. So that's been really good. And it's 13 episode series, I think. I'm 5 in already, and I started watching it yesterday or the day before. So,
wow.
So, you know, I've just been, you know, it's been, oh, I'll watch another one, you know, one of those things. So that's been great. I've been trying to catch up on some old shows, which I missed or I'd watched a few episodes of and then dropped out of because other things had got in the way. So I've been catching back up on Billions, which is a great series, and I'm thoroughly enjoying that.
Yeah, I'm told really good things about Billions, actually.
Yeah, it is superbly well done. It's sort of these two major talents, both on and off screen, the sort of guy that's the district attorney from New York, which is Paul Giamatti's character, and then you've got this guy who's a hedge fund manager that the hedge fund is sort of prepared to bend a few rules, and you've got one going after the other, that's Damon Lewis's character. So they've been at sort of loggerheads, and as it's gone on, there's been various schemes for one to try and topple the other, and it's ended up with them kind of both in the crap. So this sort of season is them trying to get out from under that and sort of reluctantly having to help each other at certain points to try and pull themselves both out of it. That's superb. I'm thoroughly enjoying that. The Good Doctor, I've finally got around to finishing off that season. I got like, you know, about halfway through and sort of hadn't got back to it. Really solid medical drama from David Shaw, who's the guy behind House, and it's very House-like. If you're a fan of House, it's worth it. It's basically House with autism, pretty much. Yeah. Because the lead character is very high-functioning autistic, who's a doctor at this hospital. And it's basically about him sort of working, trying to have a normal life within this hospital and the effect that it has on the people around him. It's just very, very well written. It's out of a lot of the medical dramas there, this is one, I think, well worth going to see.
Is he nice to people, Dave?
Ish, yes.
Okay, good.
I mean, he is. He's nice to people, but it's that thing of not really being able to sort of read people's reactions to stuff.
So, because House famously was not nice, and that was great. No, really enjoyed that.
Yeah, no, it is House-like in the sort of setup and the fact that the lead character is this sort of genius doctor. It's not, you know, but the characterization is very much different. He's a much sweeter character than that.
Oh, good.
But there are certain things, because he just doesn't
understand.
See and doesn't realize when he might say something inappropriate, like, you know, there'll be next to a person and they'll be doing a diagnosis, and rather than be kind of very subtle about it, he'll be going like, yeah, they're going to die. So, you know, there are things like that come out where, well, on the doctoring front, in terms of physically doing surgery, he's brilliant. His sort of patient care is not necessarily 100% because he doesn't know how to connect with people.
Sounds like a mix between House and Atypical.
Yes, yeah, there is a certain amount of that as well. But it's really good, that show. Well worth watching. That's back for a new season. I don't know. It's back for a new season in the US later this year, I think so. Gaming wise, I've delved back into No Man's Sky, which, if for those of you that ever followed anything on No Man's Sky is basically this huge procedurally generated universe of billions of planets, and you start off stranded on one particular planet with a crashed ship. You have to fix the ship. You can then fly up into the universe. There are space stations. There are places to go and trade. You can build things. You can mine things. There are a couple of of kind of core missions about following this sort of unraveling mystery of a thing called Atlas. So there is that storyline to follow. There is another storyline about rescuing a traveler like you that's also got lost. So you're trying to help him as well. So there are various kind of core storylines, but it is basically a giant sandbox where you can build bases and craft various crafts and fly around the universe. And when it came out, it promised all this stuff and really under-delivered. And it's been 2 years since the original launch. They just put out a massive update called No Man's Sky Next. And it's completely changed the game. It really is what it promised it would be in the first place now. Vastly, vastly superior to a lot of the other sort of spacefaring games out there. You can, you know, meet a bunch of different aliens. You have to learn alien languages. Just really good fun. If you like those giant sandbox games and you maybe played No Man's Sky before, go back and have a look at the game now, because it is a completely different animal to what it was if you played it at release. It really should sort of get Game of the Year for most improved game, because I don't think any game has managed to pull itself up from the point that it started at to the level it's at now. I've never seen any game manage to make that sort of leap, and for free. They've not charged extra for any of the update stuff. They've just kept on working on it and improving and improving it. You know, all the updates have been free, and it's turned it into a completely different game. Really recommend you go and take another look at it if you've not been near No Man's Sky and you've got a disc sat around, or you've got it sat on your computer in your Steam and you haven't kind of booted it up. It's worth installing and having a look again. And the other thing I did this week was MCM Comic Con in Manchester. So I went up to Manchester for the 2 days in the last month that it decided to rain. But then it wouldn't be Manchester if it wasn't raining, as far as I'm concerned. So I went up there. There is a bunch of interviews which are up on the website and on the YouTube channel. Kari Payton and Cooper Andrews from Walking Dead, we talked to those two guys again, and they're hilarious. Well worth going to look at that interview video. Talk with Nolan North, who is the voice of Nathan Drake in The Last of Us games. Christopher Judge, who is Teal'c in Stargate, and is also the voice of Kratos in God of War as well. He was great, and he actually says there is something new coming in the Stargate world as well, which hasn't been announced yet, but he definitely said there is something in development at the moment, so we'll bring you more on that when we know about it. Zach McGowan, who's been in a bunch of different things like The 100 and Black Sails, and Benedict Wong, who plays Wong in the Doctor Strange and Infinity War movies. He did a panel while we were there, so I've got all the stuff from that. Didn't get the entire panel from him, unfortunately, due to what I shall refer to as a user-induced technical error. So
come on, Dave, what happened?
I somehow managed to turn the camera off when I thought I was turning it on. So I got most of that panel. I missed the bit at the start where he was talking about kind of how he got into acting and that sort of thing, but I got all the stuff about him talking about Infinity War and him talking about Deadly Class, which is the new Russo Brothers TV show which he's involved in, and the Q&A at the end as well, where people ask him a bunch of questions. So that's all up there as well.
Comic-Con's a great time to check out Geek Town Instagram.
Yes.
Because you get some really good cosplayers on there.
Yes, I have got a bunch of photos that I need to put up on the Instagram, which I haven't put up yet, but I will be going to do that once everything else is kind of out the way. And now the videos are sorted and this is done, we'll be doing that. So I will check out the Instagram over the next few weeks and there will be new photos going up. So that's all the stuff we've been doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news. TV and film news this week kicks off with our usual renewals, cancellations and pickups. And you'd think there'd be less because we are post San Diego Comic Con. But right after San Diego Comic Con happens, they do a thing called the Critics Association Press Tour. So all the people that didn't announce stuff at Comic Con announced stuff during the press tour. So this week's been a wash with a ridiculous amount of news and stuff about upcoming shows and that sort of thing. So first thing which came out today, so really hot off the presses because it was literally announced 40 minutes before we came on air.
Wow.
Timeless, the TV show which was cruelly cancelled by NBC, will be coming back, but it's only coming back for a two-part series finale. So there is going to be essentially a feature-length two-part finale, which is going to round off the story for Timeless. So,
well, you know, a lot of seasons don't get that much.
Yeah, exactly. So they have been listening to fans, and thankfully NBC have now relented and they've said that they will do that. It might not be the new season that we wanted, but they tried selling it to various other places and no bites from Netflix or places like that. So this was really the only option that they had to finish off the story, because it did end on quite a phenomenal cliffhanger. So I'm very happy that they are back and doing this. I'd be sad to see it go, because I think it was a wonderfully fun show, but at least it's getting rounded off properly. That I'm happy about. Something else coming to an end: The Affair has been renewed for a fifth and final season, so that's got a fifth season, but it will be its last. Fear the Walking Dead was renewed for a fifth season. Better Call Saul has been renewed for a fifth season as well, so they're all coming back. Amazon has renewed Sneaky Pete, which is absolutely brilliant, and that's been renewed for a third season.
Right.
Greg Berlanti's psychological thriller You, which is essentially about a sort of stalker relationship, that has been renewed for a second season before season one even airs. That's a Netflix series over here. I'm not sure about the US, but it's a Netflix series over here. But that's been renewed for a second season before season one even airs. HBO have greenlit a Deadwood movie. If you're a fan of the Western show Deadwood, that will be coming back for a movie version, because it's basically taken them, I mean, it went off air about 7 years ago, and it's taken this long to manage to get all the cast in the same place. So that's basically coming back. Endemol Shine, who are the people that make Humans, are remaking Humans for the Chinese market. And we actually, if you go up on the website, we did post a couple of publicity shots they did for that. And they are going to be selling it internationally. So it may be that we get a Chinese language version sold back to us, and it ends up on something like Walter Presents on E4, on the Channel 4 service or something like that. But that could be one to watch out for. It looks kind of quite interesting. Colony, the sci-fi series, has been cancelled after three seasons, which is unfortunate, because that was quite a good show, but that's not going to be coming back. Netflix UK has picked up the rights to the TNT sci-fi series Snowpiercer, which is based on the film of the same name, and a true crime anthology series called Dirty John. So they've picked that, both those up. They've also renewed Altered Carbon for a second season, but it's going to have Anthony Mackie in the lead this time as Takashi Kovacs. He will replace Joel Kinnaman, who played the part in the first season. But if you know anything about Altered Carbon, they have the ability to re-sleeve into different bodies. So it's quite easy for the same character, much like Doctor Who. It's basically, you know, the same character, but an entirely different body.
Right.
So Anthony Mackie will be taking over the lead for that. Lock and Key, which is a show which has been kicking around for about 3 or 4 years in one development form or another. It's a comic book adaptation that's finally landed a series order on Netflix. So if you're a fan of that comic book, that's one to look out for. And The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is coming to Netflix. This is the Riverdale adjacent, shall we say, show, which is coming to Netflix. And that's arriving on the 26th of October, Friday the 26th. October, that will be turning up. So that's one to look out for. Was originally supposed to be a spin-off from Riverdale and was going on to the CW, but then Netflix bought it and gave it a two-season order of 10 episodes a season, I think. So it probably won't be crossing over with Riverdale anytime soon. Not impossible, it may still do, because the production team's exactly the same behind it, but with one being on Netflix, Riverdale being on CW, might cause problems with any form of crossover. But they are technically in the next town over, so whether that will happen, we don't know. But yeah, looks kind of interesting. It's a much darker take on Sabrina the Teenage Witch, that. So moving on to the bigger news stories. Do you remember I if you were listening to the show last week, which of course you were.
Of course.
We were talking about a potential Buffy reboot, which has been kicking around. And it comes from the writer of Midnight Texas, Monica Olsen-Breen, who is working with Joss Whedon on the reboot. Joss Whedon is involved, but she is going to be the showrunner and the writer of it. We talked about it because it came out as saying, oh, they're rebooting Buffy. That doesn't actually seem to be exactly the case, which I think we did actually say last week, that the news had got jumped on as, oh, they're rebooting it. And then fans roll up in arms and go, how can you reboot it? That's terrible. She then came onto Twitter and gave out a statement which says, for some genre writers, it's Star Wars. Buffy the Vampire Slayer was my Star Wars. Before I became a writer, I was a fan for 7 seasons. I watched Buffy Summers grow up, find love, kill that love. I watched her fight, struggle, and slay. There's only one Buffy, one Xander, one Willow, Giles, Cordelia, Oz, Tara, Kendra, Faith, Spike, Angel. They can't be replaced. Joss Whedon's brilliant and beautiful series can't be replicated. I wouldn't try to. But here we are 20 years later, and the world seems a lot scarier. So maybe it's time to meet a new Slayer. That's all I can say.
Oh, interesting. So it might be a non-Buffy, Buffy universe.
Yeah, so it sounds to me like it is going to be a continuation of that Buffyverse, which makes far more sense to me. Because the whole idea of rebooting it didn't really make any sense to throw away. Yeah. You know, because not only throwing away 7 seasons of the original show, you're also throwing away Angel and you're throwing away the comic books, which continued the series afterwards. So you've got all that history and world
free,
building. Yeah, that you can build into. And so it makes more sense to do it that way.
Definitely.
Now, if you remember the TV series, it ended with the power of the Slayer being spread out amongst all the potential Slayers. And that story is then the story that they continued on with in the comic books, which are referred to as season 8 and 9. So you can continue that story there. However, there is also a comic book called Frey, which is part of the Buffyverse as well, because there have been crossovers with Buffy as a character in those comic books. And Frey, I think, turns up in the season 8 and 9 books as well. So Frey is set in a future, and in that future, all the power of the Slayer is back in one person.
Right.
So at some point, that whole process of spreading the Slayer power out has to revert back.
Yeah. It's got to converge back.
So we know that that already happens at some point. So it's entirely possible that this show maybe deals with some of that. I mean, we're speculating here. We have absolutely no idea what she's going to write. But it, you know, it is established that that happens at some point. So it would make sense that that either happens beforehand or it happens during this part of the show, because otherwise you've got lots of Slayers running around, which might not necessarily be a problem. But you've also, if you want to keep all the comic book stuff in continuity, which it has been up until this point, then you're going to have to find a way of dealing with that. So it will be a Vampire Slayer series, but might not be Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It could be Sarah the Vampire Slayer. You know? So still in very early stages of development at the moment. I mean, it's not going to network, may not even go to series. I suspect it will get piloted somewhere. I suspect somebody will want it, but we'll have to see what happens with that. Next story we have is a new Netflix show that's coming, which is a modern take on Lord of the Flies, which sounds kind of interesting. It stars Catherine Newton, who you may recognize from Supernatural. She played Claire Novak in Supernatural, who would have been part of the Wayward Sisters spinoff had that got picked up, but it didn't. So she also starred in Big Little Lies as well, and she was in Halt and Catch Fire. The currently untitled series follows a group of teenagers who are mysteriously transported to a facsimile of their wealthy New England town, but left without any trace of their parents. So they struggle to figure out what's happened to them and how to get home. They must establish order and form alliances if they want to survive.
That definitely sounds like Lord of the Flies.
Yes, so it's very sort of Lord of the Flies, a hint of The 100 maybe in there as well. Although they sounds like they've got at least the modern conveniences. They've just got no adults around, you know. So, yeah, I don't know. Sounds like a kind of interesting idea, this.
And you know what, Dave? It's on Netflix. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Comes from Christopher Kaiser, who is something that knows something about writing shows about kids without parents, because he created Party of Five, which is, you know, was a show about a bunch of kids who'd her parents, I think, were killed in a car crash, and they sort of had to learn how to cope as a family. He also co-wrote Tyrant, the FX series, and the Amazon show The Last Tycoon. He's actually working on a Party of Five reboot as well at the moment, with the twist on that version being it's a Mexican-American family who are left to survive on their own after their parents are deported back to Mexico.
Ooh, so, very topical.
Yeah, so very topical version, that. The Untitled series that, whatever it happens to be called for Netflix, it's been directed by Mark Webb, who is the man behind the camera for The Amazing Spider-Man and 500 Days of Summer. So fairly solid director behind it.
Yeah.
The fact that it's a Netflix series fills me with confidence that they're going to get it right, because
there's this thing about, like, whoever picks up a series or starts making a series, you never know, unless it's Netflix. And then it always feels like, because Netflix have done some series that I haven't been into personally,
yeah,
but there's always this feeling of like, oh, it'll be all right, it's Netflix.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, they've had very, very few things where they've made a series and it's been a sort of swing and a miss.
Yeah.
There was Everything Sucks, I think, they did recently, which got canned after one season, but that's very, very rare that happens for a Netflix show.
If they can get away with still making these Marvel TV shows and still making them at least three episodes too long, I think this will be fine.
Yeah, so I think this sounds quite interesting, so we'll have to see. News coming over from Fox we have next, but as I say, we are in the process of being bought by Disney, but they apparently have a Young Jack Bauer 24 prequel in the works. It was announced today.
12 and a half, we could call it.
Yeah, maybe. The franchise, which is seemingly unkillable like its star, it's potentially coming back. They have a prequel series following a young Jack Bauer, who obviously goes on to join CTU, but it will be his early life, I guess, either before he joined CTU or him as a young agent in CTU, because he's a fairly experienced agent by the time we meet him at the start of 24. So this isn't the only thing they're doing for 24. We've talked about this before, how they've also looking at the possibility of using the 24 ticking clock format to create an anthology series which would use that format but with different characters each season in entirely different settings. So they're talking about doing one which maybe is a female-led legal drama where she's trying to save a death row inmate 24 hours before his execution.
That's interesting.
So
because the concept of things happening in 24 hours, that's fairly applicable to anything, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, they might have one like that. They might have one that's set in a hospital during a crisis or, you know. So they were talking about that as a possibility. That format, we think, is still in development as well. Whereas what they're talking about, this sort of young Jack Bauer series, rather than being that sort of anthology format, they're talking about that being an ongoing sort of series rather than a limited series. Because, of course, the other thing was with Live Another Day and Legacy, they were both 12 episodes, not 24 episodes. So whether they would do it as a full 24 episode ongoing series or whether they try it out with a 12 episode series and then maybe go to a 24, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, people have been a bit sniffy about this when the news came out today. I sort of think if you're going to try it again, it makes sense to keep Jack Bauer around as the character. Kiefer is 51 at this point, and he himself has given reservations about stepping into that role again.
Sure.
I mean, it is fairly physically demanding. It sort of makes sense. If you're going to do it and you want Jack Bauer in there, maybe you do it with a young actor and show some of the early life. There is a hilarious video done by Funny or Die, which talks about a sort of 90s version of Jack Bauer where they're faxing things to each other, and they don't, the cell phones are like huge and that sort of stuff, a sort of 80s, 90s version, which, yes, that is going to be kind of interesting because you would have to dial back the tech a bit, which... Mm. Given how tech heavy CTU tends to be on 24.
Yeah, that seems like an interesting challenge. So they've got the same with Captain Marvel, right? Where you've got to go back to the 90s. So there's certain limitations on where the story could go. And I think, superheroes is one thing, they can do whatever they want. But in terms of like a real people who work for the government or whoever, like a task force type people, limiting the situations to have only so much technology is an interesting spin.
Yeah.
If I think if it's done right, that could be really good.
I'm quite intrigued by this. And I mean, it's been done to success before. They did a Taken series based on the movie franchise. There is a Jack Ryan series, which Amazon are so confident in, they've ordered a second season of it already, even though it doesn't come out until the end of this end of August. You've got Young Sheldon, which technically is a prequel series of Big Bang. So, I mean,
it's true, yeah.
This sort of approach seems to be fairly popular at the moment. I actually don't have a massive problem with it. I think it's going to be interesting. The slight spanner in the works for Fox, assuming it does end up on Fox or whatever new Fox is post the Disney takeover, because Disney are buying 21st Century Film and Television Studios. That doesn't necessarily include the channel, I don't think. Mm-hmm. So there will be a Fox channel. But it means that a lot of the shows that they are making through the television studio, they will have to lease back the license off Disney. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting to see what happens with that. But we'll see. Well, I don't know. It's out there. It is in development. We'll see what happens with that. And lastly, we've got some casting for Star Wars Episode 9. Two new cast members and the return of a bunch of old ones as well. Interestingly, they announced this casting a few days ago. They've said that Mark Hamill, Anthony Daniels and Billy Dee Williams are all confirmed. Billy Dee Williams obviously reprising his role as Lando Calrissian for the first time. Mark Hamill, I'm guessing, will be a blue glowy ghost.
I was going to say, ghost. You've got to presume Force Ghost.
I would assume, sorry if that spoiled the next movie, but if you haven't seen it by now...
What are you doing?
You're doing. They've also said that Carrie Fisher will be back as Leia in that film. Which is interesting. And they've also said they aren't going to do CGI or anything like that. They're doing it using previously unreleased footage, which was shot for The Force Awakens, which was the last movie that JJ did. And JJ is now directing this movie as well. So it's going to be stuff that they shot for The Force Awakens. They're going to be using that and reworking it into this film in some way. So it's not going to be a CGI character. I'm fairly sure they say it's not going to be a CGI character. There probably is going to be some CGI trickery, I would imagine, in there to manipulate it. But it is going to be her performance that they're putting on screen. I think that's kind of interesting. JJ said... finding a truly satisfying conclusion to the Star Wars saga without her eluded us. We're never going to recast or use a CG character. With support and blessing from her daughter, Billy, we have found a way to honour Carrie's legacy and role as Leia in Episode 9 by using unseen footage we shot in Episode 7.
Yeah, I guess that's the interesting thing, isn't it? Like, how to do it is very difficult, but ignoring it seems very strange.
Yeah, so I mean, they had to, because they didn't kill her off Episode 8, so she couldn't have just vanished and be killed off screen. I think that wouldn't work.
Yeah, definitely. There's no closure there, then,
is
there?
So yeah, you had to do that. In terms of new characters, we've got Naomi Aki, who was in the Five and popped up in Doctor Who. She's joining, and Withnail and Ale legendary star Richard E. Grant is joining as well. But this being Star Wars, they've obviously not released character descriptions for anybody, so we don't know who they're playing. I can see Richard E. Grant playing some sort of Imperial, I would have thought, somebody in the First Order.
Yeah, sort of a very straight sort of almost has that sort of ring of what was his name? Is it Domhnall Gleeson?
Yeah.
Maybe a bit more senior, but you can definitely see the sort of,
somebody more senior in that side of things. I mean, I could be completely wrong about that, but I could certainly see him on that side of things. It's also going to have John Williams back writing the music for it, which I think we all knew, but this is possibly his last time on the Star Wars franchise. I think he said previously that he's kind of done with Star Wars after this one. So we just have to wait until December next year to see what they come up with.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? They're just waiting and seeing for it. But I mean, it's going to be a big deal, whatever happens.
Yeah, it is. I'm very much looking forward to that movie, but we'll see. That should be fun. So that's all the news for this week. Next up, we have an interview.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The interview this week is with production designer Judy Ree. Judy is an experienced production designer whose work can be seen across TV, film and commercials. Her previous projects included working with Stephen Conrad on the Amazon series Patriot, starring Michael Dorman. She worked on the political satire Alpha House, starring John Goodman, also for Amazon. She's worked on movies such as 2 Days in New York, which was co-written and directed by Julie Delphi, and The Greatest, starring Susan Sarandon, Carey Mulligan and Michael Shannon. Her latest two projects that she's been working on sees her step into a couple of very established worlds, one of which we've been talking about quite a lot, the Breaking Bad spin-off Better Call Saul, and Marvel's Jessica Jones as well, she worked on, both of which air on Netflix in the UK. Judy joined Better Call Saul for the upcoming full season, which comes to Netflix on Tuesday the 7th of August, which continues the story of lawyer Jimmy McGill and his transformation into the rather shadier Saul Goodman. So we chat about the new season, what's it like stepping into such an established world and dealing with new and potentially old sets for the show as well. We also discussed some of her work on Jessica Jones season 2, which you worked on. She was really lovely to talk to. Here's the interview with Judy Ree. We will see you afterwards for some highlights for next week on TV. It's lovely to talk to you. Thank you for coming on to chat for a bit.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. You've worked on two of my favorite TV shows, so...
Oh, what's the second one?
Better Call Saul and Jessica Jones.
Oh, great.
So I love both of those shows. We've spoken to quite a lot of people from Jessica Jones, but never somebody from Better Call Saul, so...
Great.
Should we start off with a little bit of background? How did you get into the industry in the first place?
Yeah, so I went to art school initially, and then I transferred to NYU to go to film school.
Right.
And was there for undergrad, and oddly enough... realized recently that Vince Gilligan and I were there at the same time. Yes, so funny. And so I went to film school and went there for, you know, a few years, graduated, and during which time I was bartending.
Right.
And one of my regular customers came in, and who used to do makeup for the Metropolitan Opera. He was working on a horror film, and he said, they're going to fire the art department tomorrow, so you should go down there if you want a job. So I did that and got hired as an art intern initially for a film called Frankenhooker. Frank Henenlotter, the director, did a film right after that called Basket Case 2. And then I worked as a prop person on that and just started meeting people. And after that point, it was all word of mouth and recommendations. And I just have kept working ever since, many years ago.
For people that haven't heard us interview a production designer before, do you just want to explain what your job entails?
Sure. A production designer usually gets hired by the producer or the director, and whether it's for a film or TV, and basically collaborates to give the show or the film a look to start creating the world in which the stories will take place. And once that's established, you know, they hire the art department, which entails the set designers, the art directors, the, you know, construction coordinators who then build the sets, the scenic artists who then paint the sets, the set decorators, set dressing team that will dress the sets. And prop masters usually can fall under the art department or they get hired separately as their own entity.
Right.
And so from episode to episode or for the whole film, you come up with a continuity, a visual continuity to help create a world. So it's quite a responsibility and usually gets hired before the director of photography. Usually when they come on or the costume designer, a world gets discussed and collaborated with to then come up with all the details of what this world will look like.
Yeah, okay. So the show, main show you really want to talk about is Better Call Saul. When did you come onto that project and how did it come to you?
I was brought on by Melissa Bernstein. She had seen my work on Patriot with Stephen Conrad.
Yeah.
And I was introduced to Peter and Vince Gilligan, and we, the three of us, had a nice conversation, and I was hired for season four. And this is my first season with Better Call Saul. And, you know, I was, of course, thrilled since I was and still am a huge fan of Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. I think it's Peter and Vince have created such an incredible world of characters and one of the best written shows, I think, around. So I was over the moon when I was invited to join the team. So as a production designer who comes on for the fourth season, you know, the look of Saul has already been established to some degree from the first season, but also as a carryover from Breaking Bad. So my job is to keep the visual continuity as well as insert and introduce my own vision of new sets and locations that will come up for this season and seasons to come. So, yeah, it's an interesting balancing act to keep the bigger thread in mind, but then also have your own signature that you can introduce and integrate.
I was actually going to ask about that sort of making your mark on the show, I guess, in when right. you come in this far through. There are obviously some established areas, but I mean, I guess there isn't one particular location that's stayed the same since season one in that show, because it does move around a lot, and they burnt down Chuck's house, so
right. Well, you'll see Chuck's house again,
right?
Yes. And Chuck will, you'll see him as well in season four. And there's a lot of older locations and sets that may make a comeback without going into specifics from previous seasons as well as possibly from Breaking Bad. So that'll be interesting for, I think, a lot of viewers and people who follow the show. And there are other sets that are coming back as well that you've seen previously.
So were you getting to create some new sets for this? Is there anything you can tell me about it without getting in trouble?
I'll have to keep it very vague, yeah. But yes. There are several new sets that I'm very excited about. That was a completely new introduction. And so that was exciting to do in terms of being able to reflect the evolution of each of the characters involved and how these environments will reflect where they are in the timeline. So you'll see a new work environment for Kim.
Right, yes.
I can't say more than that. And that will reflect kind of her personal aspirations as well as her continued need to support and nurture Jimmy in the relationship. So that was an interesting and fun set to design. As well as, you know, Jimmy will continue on his evolution in his work life. And so there are a few new work environments for him as well that are also very fun and was very exciting to design and introduce.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a few bits and pieces from the trailers, although they don't give that much away about locations. A lot of it's in offices. So we do see the church, which I'm assuming is the funeral, quite early on. I'm assuming that's a real location rather than a set.
Yeah, that was a real location that we slightly modified and augmented for the specific needs of the script.
Right.
The background of Chuck is that he's Catholic, so we turned Episcopalian church into more of a, not Roman Catholic, but more Catholic than Episcopalian. So there were some modifications we had to do with set dressing, yeah.
Right, right. You're obviously using a mix of sets and real locations. What are the sort of plush and minuses to using real locations versus sets and vice versa?
Well, for TV, the challenge always is the time. You don't ever have enough time, and so you have to maximize what you can. And depending on what's written on the page and what's needed, you have to start thinking in terms of how the camera can cover those scenes, specifically what's written. So I think that dictates usually if it's going to be a location or a set build, and then also the schedule. how the specific schedule lays out for that particular episode will dictate how many company moves you can do and how many days you have to achieve and complete the episode. So with those two things in mind, that usually gives you a pretty clear answer as to whether or not you'll build it or you'll find it as a location.
And I mean, the thing with the show like Better Call Saul is it's not like it's sci-fi. So you can go and find set locations which are maybe appropriate for the thing, you know.
Right. But also, you know, because of the way that it's shot, it's specific visual references and how they like to shoot. You do want the flexibility of being able to pull walls and ceilings.
Yeah.
So I think the size of what's written, the size of the space, the size of the room will help always if you can build a set. I always prefer to build a set.
Yeah.
If you have the time. You don't always have the time because oftentimes there'll be 16 to 20 different locations or scripted scenes in various sets or locations that you won't always have the schedule to do as a build. So you'll have to find most of it.
Yeah. What's been the most challenging thing for you coming onto this show?
I think the most challenging is the specificity of all the details in all the sets that you still have to consider and keep in mind from previous episodes and previous seasons. So there is a continuity that you have to follow in terms of how it was shot, what was shot, and what was already established. So even though perhaps you are going back to a set that maybe you haven't seen the room, but it's connected to a bigger office that was shot in the past, you still have to consider what was that architecture that you'll have to keep the continuity of and that sort of thing. So there's dense history that has to get considered in terms of its timeline, accuracy, as well as how it was shot previously.
Yeah, you can't have somebody starting off in a sort of fairly old looking building and then suddenly walk through to a really modern looking office. It doesn't really work.
Right. It would be very distracting for viewers, I think, and confusing.
And what's been the most fun thing for you on this season?
Well, the fun definitely is for the new sets, because yeah. There's nothing that you have to adhere to in terms of it being connected to anything that was shot previously. So it's a new set. You have your own interpretation of it. You know, with the timeline in mind, we are still in 2003. We are in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And there is a visual thread you have to keep for the show. But within those general guidelines, you can invent pretty much whatever you'd like. And, you know, Peter and the writers were so fantastic in being open to interpretations and various ideas that I would have. And then it becomes a dialogue. And, you know, they're often very specific about what they would like this world to look and feel like. But I think what's really great is they're open to collaboration.
Yeah, that must be great fun, just building out a world like that, particularly having that sandbox to play in as well with all the history from Breaking Bad and, you know, and right. And the fact that it jumps around in time in yeah. aspects in that show as well. You mentioned possibly bringing some of the Breaking Bad sets, which I think they've hinted at in the various Comic-Con things as well. So,
right.
So I think you're safe. So that
I really can't say more than that, but it'll be very interesting.
Yeah, that could be really intriguing. I've not seen any kind of laser pointers land on your chest or anything. Somebody from AMC trying to take you out. So, as I said at the start, the other show which I adore is Jessica Jones, and phenomenal group of people working on that. We spoke to Elizabeth, the costume designer, and Sarit, the makeup artist, on that. Great. One thing I love about that show is it's a very, very female-led production. I mean, you know, all yes. female directors for the last season. How did that opportunity come to you, and what was it like working on that series?
That opportunity presented itself through my agent. I interviewed for it with Tim Isofano, the producer, who's fantastic, as well as Melissa Rosenberg and Rael Tucker. So the three of us had a meeting. It went really well. I loved that show as well. So I was also thrilled when I got hired to do that. I wasn't so familiar with the Alias graphic novel, but I loved the show nonetheless. And working on that was such a joy. You know, it was very challenging because once again, it's all about the time that you have to create the worlds in which are written. And the writing is so fantastic. Melissa and her team of writers do a fantastic job. And working with all female directors was great as well. You know, they're very collaborative, and it was an interesting group of directors that I had never worked with before. So that was all very new and just different. And I can't say more than how happy I was to get hired. I wasn't available to do the following season because I was on Saul.
Okay. So which season of that was it that you did?
Jessica Jones, that was season 2.
Okay, yeah. So you had quite a lot of the stuff in season 2. There was that segment where they went back in Jessica's history as well, which I thought was quite interesting. I mean, it was very interesting from the costume side of things, of sort of her getting the jacket and sort of stuff. How was it for you kind of on some of the sets?
The best part about that season for me was getting to design Hogarth's apartment. And that was a new set, and that was fun and thrilling, and having an opportunity to interpret her character through her new apartment was just so exciting. And in terms of going back in Jessica's timeline, you know, that required a lot of research because of, you know, everything that gets noticed by the fans, you know, who equally scrutinize it like Better Call Saul. So it was earlier. So things like, you know, the technology of cell phones and background cars and graphics and just New York City alone, which has changed tremendously. You know, it changes radically every 2 to 5 years.
Yeah.
But we had to switch out a lot of signage and graphics and storefronts, you know, to give it the accuracy of that particular timeline. So that was that particular challenge on that show or that season.
You've got a great mix of things on that show as well, from Jessica's kind of fairly tiny apartment right through to like you say, Jerry's massive opulent sort of space, which is wonderful.
Right. Well, Jessica's apartment also goes through a bit of evolution as well.
Yeah.
To kind of help reflect Malcolm's journey and his, I guess, recovery. Mm. So her apartment got utilized for that, as well as her evolution of her going back and dealing with her family's history. And I think what we'll probably see in the upcoming season is maybe Malcolm will get his own apartment and we'll start to see more of that. Although we did see it in season 2, we may sort of see more in season 3, I think.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to seeing the rest of that. And they're managing to get them out faster as well now, you know, so that's always good.
Which makes it very challenging for the art department. Of their air dates, yeah.
Just a couple of things to wrap up. First of all, what are you doing next? Because I'm assuming you've finished on Soul now since it's about to come out. So
I am moving on to collaborating with Steve Conrad on a new show, which I'm not sure that I'm to speak of.
Right.
So once again, I have to be tight-lipped about.
Yeah.
It will be very interesting, and it will be similar to the tone and the atmospheric writing that he did for Patriot.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That'd be good. Is that going to be for Amazon again, or is that for somebody else?
This will be for Epics.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah.
We really struggle to get some of the Epics shows over here. It's really frustrating because they've got some great content on that network, and
yes,
it doesn't get picked up that much over this side of the Atlantic. And for the life of me, I can't think why. So I'm hoping that some more of the Epics stuff comes across because they've got some great shows on that network.
They do, yeah. So yeah, you'll have to look for the new Steve Conrad lineup.
I will keep an eye out for that and see what I could see. And the last two questions we always ask everybody. Firstly, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
Right now, I just started The Crown. I'm very late to the game on this. It's more about time and not a lack of interest. I've got a very long list. That's on my list. Handmaid's Tale's on my list. And Babylon Berlin is on my list.
Right, yes. I've not seen Babylon Berlin, but The Handmaid's Tales are just epic, and The Crown's brilliant as well. I'm very interested to see what they do with the new cast, because they change the cast every 2 seasons. So,
that'll be interesting.
Yes, rather than age up the actors, they decided to switch out the cast every 2 seasons for older actors that are more appropriate. Olivia Colman is the queen in the third season. So
great. Yes, so. I just started the first season, so don't tell me more.
I won't tell you anything about it, but it's really well done. I do adore that show. It's very good. And the last question, if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, past, present, or future, which show would it be?
Oh, past, definitely The Twilight Zone.
Yes.
I would have loved to have worked on that show just because the writing was so fantastic. And it was, once again, so open to interpretation. It could have gone in any direction, and it was so well done. So for me, yes, it's always about the writing because it really helps my design process from designing from the inside out. So if the writing is there and it's strong, it just makes my life so much more directioned in a way as opposed to inventing something from scratch. And so, you know, whether I'm working with Steve Conrad or Peter Gould or, you know, Melissa Rosenberg, if the writing is there, it's just this great inspirational collaborative process. So Twilight Zone, I think, had that in just aces. So I would have loved to have worked on that. And I think it would have been challenging to figure out the whole black and white scheme from episode to episode. And I know there's a whole art form to that, which I've only touched upon here and there, but that would have been just thrilling for me.
Yeah, that's a good choice. It's come up a couple of times before, I think, because as well, you're doing different things every single episode as well, which is, right. So there's a lot of scope.
From different genres.
Yeah, yeah. So because it's that kind of anthology format, I can definitely see the appeal. So thank you for spending a bit of time talking. It's been a real pleasure.
Likewise. Thank you, Dave. Thank you so much.
So have a great day. Yes. I'm looking forward to seeing Better Call Saul soon.
I hope you enjoy it.
I will. All right. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.
That was the interview with Better Call Saul and Jessica Jones production designer Judy Rhee. Better Call Saul is back on Netflix from Tuesday the 7th of August. And of course, you can see first two seasons of Jessica Jones on Netflix as well. Now we've got some highlights for next week on TV. So, highlights for next week. Surprising amount of things starting.
Yeah, lots and lots happening.
Given that it's August. Casual is back for its fourth and final season on Amazon Prime. I've not seen any of this. People tell me it's quite funny, but there you go. That's the 1st of August on Amazon Prime for Casual. Cuckoo season 4 of that, which you may have missed this because it's coming to BBC Three and I completely missed stuff on BBC Three. 2nd of August at 10 a.m. That returns. That's the show with Greg Davis. I think it gets repeated at some point on BBC One or BBC Two, but Cuckoo season 4, BBC Three from the 2nd of August at 10 a.m. That will be there. Succession, which is a new HBO drama that's coming to Sky Atlantic on the 2nd of August at 9 p.m., follows the Roy family, who control one of the biggest media and entertainment conglomerates in the world. It's interesting. The trailers seem to make this seem quite serious, but I'm told it's funnier than that. So, I mean, it seems to be a sort of kind of look at a sort of fictional Murdoch empire, I think is what they're going for. Stars Brian Cox, not the scientist one, the actor one. And he's brilliant. So I'm quite looking forward to seeing that and seeing whether it's any good or not. But called Succession, coming to Sky Atlantic on the 2nd of August at 9 p.m. for that. Revere, which is coming to Sci-Fi on the 2nd of August as well. That is a show about people stuck in a virtual reality, basically. I don't know much about this. They've been pushing it quite hard, so could be one
doesn't
to watch.
Sound bad.
Seems like it could be an interesting looking sci-fi. Certainly the publicity of it, I thought, was quite well done, so we'll see. But 2nd of August, I haven't got a time for that, but I'm guessing it'll be sort of 9 o'clock-ish. But that's Revere season 1 coming to Sci-Fi UK. For the People, which is the latest Shondaland drama from the people that bought you Grey's Anatomy, How to Get Away with Murder, Scandal, and all those things. So that's coming on the 6th of August at 10 p.m. It's about a bunch of young lawyers. That's coming to Sky Witness. Sky Witness is the new name for Sky Living. From the 6th of August, Sky Living will be no more and it will be known as Sky Witness. So 6th of August at 10 p.m. for that. And then on the 7th, as we've mentioned a couple of times already, Better Call Saul arrives for season 4. So that is back. Very much looking forward to that. Also on the 7th of August at 10 p.m. on Sky Atlantic, I'm Dying Up Here, season 2 arrives, which is an absolutely brilliant comedy drama about the stand-up scene, the sort of birth of stand-up comedy in LA. If you've not seen that, it's
interesting.
It's really, really good. It's funny. It's wonderfully well written. It is very much a comedy drama. You know, it's not like pure out-and-out comedy. It is funny, though. It's very well written, well worth going to watch. Absolutely superb. So I'm dying up here. Season 2 of that, 7th of August on Sky Atlantic at 10 p.m.
That's great.
Yeah, well worth going to watch that. So that's everything for this week, unless you've got anything else you want to put in.
No, I just want to remind people to take a look at that Geek Town Instagram.
Yes, yes. Go and check out the Geek Town Instagram and go and check out the Geek Town YouTube as well, because there are a lot of videos from Comic Con this weekend up on there. Right. For everything else throughout the week, go to geektown.co.uk. We've got loads and loads of news because of the various things that have been happening this week. So there's all the news up on there on geektown.co.uk. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That's everything. We shall see you next week. Bye bye.
See you guys.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.